Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter. Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Turovich. This is Untangled, the Cost of Learning, a show from All Sides and WOSU where we take a complicated topic and untangle it for you. Try to explain it in a way that's easier to understand. This season, we are tackling the cost of learning for K-12 schools. What's it like to manage a school budget in this climate? There's debates over property taxes and state funding. There are debates over teacher pay and the salaries of administration. This hour, we will get the perspective of three districts, one urban, one suburban, and one rural. We're starting with the urban district. Columbus City Schools is the state's largest school district. The schools currently has about 46,000 students in 113 school buildings and employs about 9,000 staff and teachers. At the helm is our guest today, Columbus City School Superintendent Dr. Angela Chapman. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Chapman.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, and for full disclosure from the beginning, I have two children who are students in the Columbus School District. Now, I mentioned at the top that school budgets are a highly debated issue. Everyone thinks everyone else is doing something wrong with the money. What is the biggest obstacle you face when it comes to paying for the education of the kids in your district?
So over the last several years, our district has faced a continued imbalance between what we need to serve students effectively and what we actually receive from the state. We know that the Fair School Funding Plan was designed to create a more equitable formula for students and for school districts across the state, but our legislature has not fully funded the Fair School Funding Plan. So as a result, districts like Columbus City Schools, where we serve a large number of economically disadvantaged students, we are still not receiving the level of support and funding necessary to meet every child's unique needs. So we budgeted responsibly based on the state's projections, but the shortfall has forced us to make difficult decisions about how to stretch every dollar. And despite these challenges, our focus will always remain the same, keeping students first and ensuring their learning experiences aren't compromised.
So you are facing a budget shortfall, as you just said. You got lower than expected money from the state. There's also less federal money, which I know is a little more confusing because we're not exactly sure what federal money is coming. But because of this shortfall from the state and federal money, the board voted to cut $50 million. So I know it's not finalized yet, but where are you in that process of cutting $50 million for Columbus City Schools?
Yes, so we're preparing for the possibility of a $50 million budget reduction in the upcoming fiscal year. This is part of a larger fight for fair school funding. We have continually advocated at the State House alongside our students and staff. When we think about, we'll be providing some recommendations to our board next month in the month of November, and then the board will vote on those recommendations in the month of December. And so we're continuing to develop several different scenarios of what those budget reductions will look like. We may be able to shift some of our resources in some of the operation spaces. And so that's why you'll hear us talking a lot about transportation. You'll hear us talking a lot about facilities, as well as our open enrollment and lottery procedures and services that we offer our families. That may be an area that we may choose to find some of those cost savings so that all of those savings will not be absorbed in staffing and positions.
Right. So one of the things the board is doing to kind of pave the way for this is the board voted to change the word shall to may when it comes to busing high school students. So I know this gives flexibility to not having to bus every high school student. Are you looking at cutting all high school busing?
Well, we are looking at the budget, and we are looking at some of the pressures that we're experiencing. We know that we're spending over $77 million in funding every year for transportation, and we only receive about $30 million from the state. And so that's a huge hit on the general fund because those are resources that are not directed to our primary goal of supporting students academically in the classroom. And so we have to be thinking differently about how we can reallocate those resources so we can invest them in the classroom. And we our board will be taking a vote on that decision in the month of December. Later this month, we'll be hosting several town hall meetings across the city, inviting our families, students, and community members to join us and helping us prioritize and give us feedback on where we should hold some of these strategies very tight and where we could be a little bit more loose in terms of these investments.
And you are no stranger to transportation issues and the cost of transportation. You're currently paying a $10 million fine for not transporting some charter school and private school students. Is paying that fine cheaper than actually busing them, or is it that you don't have the capacity to bus all of them?
We simply don't have the capacity, and this is a result of the national driver shortage. And so, certainly, when we think about all of the resources I mentioned, over $75 million in funding for transportation, the fine, the penalties that we're paying for transportation fines are above and beyond that $77 million. And so, that's another $15 or $16 million that we're budgeting for the transportation penalty on top of a budget of $77 million. In that budget of $77 million, we allocate about $20 to $25 million to cover the cost of bringing in vendors to help support us with our routes because we still don't have enough drivers for the number of routes that we serve. So there's so many challenges. And there's so many resources being allocated to support transportation, but that is, again, all goes back to the national driver shortage.
This is Untangled, the Cost of Learning from All Sides, and we are talking about how we pay for K-12 education, and with us is Columbus City Schools Superintendent Angela Chapman. You mentioned, besides busing, where are some other places you're looking to save money for that $50 million? You mentioned staffing. What else? Where are we looking to save money?
So we will be looking at transportation, the services that we provide, who we transport. One of the conversations that we'll be having with our community is thinking about should we go back to the state minimum? We know that many of the large urban districts across the state have already transitioned back to the state minimum requirements. The state only requires us to provide transportation to students in K through 8 if they live more than 2 miles away from their neighborhood school. And so, post-pandemic, due to the national driver shortage, most of our peer districts made that transition years ago. And so, we're still in a space where we're providing more service above and beyond the state minimum for transportation. And so that's a question that we have to grapple with internally and externally to really assess our capacity to do that and at what cost. And so transportation is one of those areas. Our lottery and open enrollment services that we provide our families across the district. When over half of our students are attending a school outside of their neighborhood, then that also adds to the complicated transportation system of busing students all over the city. And so that's another piece that we'll be discussing. In addition, we'll bring back conversations about facilities and realignment and thinking about are there ways that we could serve more students in fewer schools and realign the programming to support equitable opportunities for them? That's another conversation. And certainly, we'll also be looking at our staffing assignments and allocations to see if that's another area that we could think differently about as we move forward.
Yeah, you've mentioned the lottery system a couple of times. You have a neighborhood school system, but then you also run an extensive and popular lottery program where kids can lottery into different schools all around the city. I've heard a lot of discussions about this lottery program that has grown very large and perhaps has too many options. Are you talking about reining in the lottery program a little bit?
Yes. And so this Thursday, we will be having a joint committee meeting with our Board of Education, and we will be presenting several different scenarios to the joint committee to consider and rethink how we provide services to our families within Columbus City Schools related to lottery and school choice. So there will still be some options and school choice for our families, but we will be thinking differently about how we scale some of that back, because it is certainly complicating an already fragile system that for transportation and how we're able to make sure that we're getting students to and from school on time so that they can access the programs that they so need.
Your district passed a levy back in 2023, but all of that money can't be used to make up this $50 million that you're trying to cut. Can you tell me why the levy money can't be used for that?
Yes. So, for example, we had in the levy supported, the 2023 operating levy supported the general fund. And on the general fund, the 38.6 mil operating levy was used to support and maintain several key positions. And so there was over 300 positions that we wanted to maintain after ESSER funding rolled off. Mm-hmm. And so those staffing positions were for building subs, safety and security specialists, social workers, counselors, interpreters, and custodians. Those are positions that we still need during this time, but we certainly don't want to eliminate all of those resources in the school and the classroom level. And then the other investment was on the permanent improvement. So $60 million per year for permanent improvement. Those are resources that are targeted only for investing in our infrastructure, our facilities, our learning environments, athletics, athletic programs, stadium, the fields. And so we will not be able to use those funds because they are earmarked specifically for permanent improvement efforts.
One popular area for complaint is the cost of administrators. Everyone always wants to cut administration. So I looked at some of the numbers. I looked at the top four school districts in Ohio. Olentangy has 151 administrators. Cincinnati has 303. Cleveland has 711. And Columbus has 388. So you do have more than Cincinnati. You have way more than Olentangy. But compared to Cleveland, you're on the slim side. What do you make of this administration debate?
Well, I would say that we also need to look at the number of administrators based on the number of students that we serve. In Columbus City Schools, we know we're the largest school district in the state with over 46,000 students. I know that Cleveland, they have more administrators. They also have fewer students than we have and that we serve in CCS. Some of those positions are compliance positions, where we are operating larger and bigger programs, and we need administrators to administer and deliver those programs year round. Remember, a lot of our teaching staff, they do not work a whole calendar year. When our students go on break for fall break and winter break and summer break, our administrators are here, again, ensuring that the system is ready to receive our students when school opens. But this is an area that we are taking a very close look at. And this is an area when we talk about budget reductions, we will be looking at all areas. And so we will make sure that we're reducing our admin count. We'll make sure that we're looking at cost reduction efforts when we look at all staff positions across the entire district. But I would say that In order to take a good close look at that, you also have to look at the number of students that we're serving and the number of programs that complement those counts.
You mentioned the Fair School Funding Plan not being fully implemented. So that was money that you got less money than you expected from the state. A big debate during that whole time was how much cash on hand school districts have, basically what's in your savings account. So on June 30th, Columbus had $372 million. That's a lot of money whenever you say that number. What do you say to lawmakers who want you to spend it and not have as much in your savings account?
Yeah, I would say there's often a misunderstanding about what's referred to as a cash carryover. For a district our size, that balance isn't extra money. It's a safeguard to maintain operational stability. State funds don't always align with our payroll cycles or ongoing expenses. So reserves ensure we can meet financial obligations all year round. These funds allow us to handle emergencies and unexpected costs without disrupting learning. And maintaining a reasonable reserve is part of being good stewards of taxpayers' dollars. It's all about fiscal stability and trust. And as we're continuing to have conversations, when our treasurer presented our 5-year forecast, he noted that we're already in deficit spending. So our cash carryover will not be significant and it won't be over that threshold because we've already provided the data and the finances that substantiates that we're reducing our funding allocation because we don't have much to carry over.
What do you say to people who say that, it costs a lot of money to run your district and more money each year? And unfortunately, the state report cards are not reflecting better results. Your district got a 2 out of 5. What do you say to people who, if we're spending all this money, especially property tax money, why aren't we seeing faster improvement?
I would say that when we look at our state report card and we look at the data, we know that we should absolutely continue to focus on continuous improvement. But what we're also highlighting here is that there's a mismatch. I just talked about $77 million in our budget that's allocated for transportation. We spend more money as a district on operations, for example, transportation, than most of our peer districts in the state and nationally. That is upside down. Those are resources that should be directed to the classroom. And so our students should have those resources to support instruction because they need it. The data supports that. But again, we have made commitments to our community and have chosen to provide transportation services above and beyond the state minimum. So there's a disconnect there that we're having conversations with our community about. So there's a question about more money, but we're talking about how we allocate our existing resources to be better stewards of the resources that we already have. This isn't a question about asking for more money. This is a question about making sure the resources that we have, the resources that are within our locus of control and our purview, that they are being directed to the classroom and not out to transportation. And so there's opportunities. Again, we know when we look at facilities, as a district, we're spending more money on facilities than all of our peer districts locally and all of our peer districts nationally. That's due to the age and condition of our facilities. So I'm pushing our board, I'm pushing our community to think differently about how we allocate those resources so we can free up those resources that and direct them to the classroom.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I hope you'll come back and talk about this again. But I appreciate your time. We've been talking with Columbus City School Superintendent Angela Chapman. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Amy. Always a pleasure to be with you.
And coming up, we're going to talk to the superintendent of Hilliard City Schools, and we're going to get a suburban district perspective. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Untangled, the Cost of Learning, a show from All Sides and WOSU where we take a complicated topic and untangle it for you. We try to explain it in a way that's easier to understand. This season, we're untangling the cost of learning for K-12 schools. And this hour, we're getting the perspective of three districts, one urban, one suburban, and one rural. We just heard from the superintendent from Columbus, and now for the suburban perspective, we're going to hear from Hilliard City School Superintendent David Stewart. Welcome to All Sides, Superintendent Stewart.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
So Hilliard has more than 16,000 students. You have 22 buildings. You serve about 60 square miles in Franklin County. As superintendent, when you think about budgets and paying for those students, what's the biggest obstacle you face?
I think right now the biggest obstacle is the constant uncertainty of where that money is going to come from and what that amount is going to be, the fluctuation out of the legislature around property taxes, around the state budget. We are constantly living in a world of uncertainty, and I think that's probably our biggest challenge.
So did Hilliard get all the money that it was expecting from the state?
Ultimately, yes. Now, again, we've been moved on to the guarantee, which means that we're being funded at 2020 levels for the foreseeable future. So I think it depends on what your question is. Is it, you know, is it what we were expecting? Ultimately, yes. Is it what we think is appropriate? Probably not. And it's putting an undue burden on our residents to fill that gap.
Yeah, I guess from what I've heard through doing this series, the Fair School Funding Plan was the closest we had gotten in about 30 years to making the state's funding plan constitutional. And it was implemented for 4 of the 6 years, but not all the way through the 6th year. So I guess what I'm asking is, did Hilliard got enough money, but you were expecting more? Is that what you mean?
No, we got what we were expecting. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, as the when the budget process finally played itself out, we did get what we had anticipated. Mm-hmm. There was some uncertainty in there for a little while, but as you said, the Fair School funding is probably the best we've done in 30 years. But there are still issues in terms of updating the cost inputs and things like that that tend to hold us back.
What about federal money? Because from what I'm hearing, it's very unclear for some districts what federal money is coming, what's been cut. It seems like it's different on the daily. Is that true for you?
Well, we got some stability. It definitely was unclear over the summer. We did not know what federal funding we were going to get. Ultimately, that all resolved itself. Federal funding is not a significant part of our operating budget. I think it's less than 2%. So, while that certainly every bit helps in it, in that the federal money goes to supporting very specific students with very specific needs. So it's incredibly important, but it's not a major part of our budget.
This whole debate over the amount of state funding versus local funding through property taxes has been going on for years, but it's been very heated over the past budget cycle. Do you find the reliance on property taxes to be an unfair system? What's your opinion on it?
I find the over-reliance on property taxes to be unfair. The court found that to be the case 30 years ago, and we've been working towards a solution ever since. Right now, I think the biggest concern is the future of property taxes in the state of Ohio and the apparent complete lack of a backup plan, should that be the case.
Mm. Yeah. So the state is working through a lot of changes to property taxes. Is that something, you know, following property tax legislation at the state house is not everyone's fun pastime, but is that something you as a superintendent need to spend a lot of time thinking about because you need to know what the future looks like when it comes to what you can ask your community for?
Yeah. Yes, we've been monitoring that closely, and we provide input, both myself and our treasurer, to our legislators as we see fit. So far, we have not been significantly hurt. There have been proposals that would have been very problematic for us, but those have either gone away or been amended to the point where they weren't quite as penalizing to us. But right now, I think it's just, looking forward, there's a lot of conversation about just doing away with property taxes in the state of Ohio. But there is not a plan B for local governments, townships and schools for how they would then secure the funding that they need. I think that's the biggest question mark for schools right now.
Yeah, there's a ballot measure out there that people want to get on the ballot to have people vote to remove property taxes. But I mean, from everything I've heard, that would be completely untenable for school districts. Would you agree?
Completely. That would be about a third of our budget, is the easiest way to put that. It would be right around a third of our overall $260 million budget. So yes, that would be incredibly challenging for us. And like I said, there isn't a superintendent or a board member in the state of Ohio, I don't think, that enjoys taxing their residents or wants to tax people out of their homes or wants to hurt seniors or anything like that. But that is the system that we have. And again, the scary part of that ballot measure is there is no substitution that is suggestion. It is simply the elimination of property taxes.
This is Untangled from All Sides and WOSU, and we're talking about the cost of K-12 education. This hour, we're getting an urban, suburban, and rural perspective. Right now, we are talking with the suburban perspective. David Stewart is the superintendent of Hilliard City Schools. So your district successfully passed a levy and bond issue last year. Is that enough money to keep things moving forward, or do you think you'll have to go back to the ballot anytime soon?
Well, we made a promise to our residents that we would not be on the ballot before 4 years, that we would stay off the ballot for at least 4 years, and we will uphold that promise. Issue 39 was a 6.9 mil operating levy, as well as a bond issue that generated $142 for new construction. That new construction is underway. Much of it, the larger pieces, are still in the planning parts, and the smaller projects, some of which are already completed. So we will fulfill our master facility plan, phase one of our master facility plan, with the bond issue. On the operating side, like I said, we have made a promise to our residents that we would stay off the ballot for 4 years. Our treasurer just presented a five-year forecast last week, and given that forecast, we will be able to uphold that promise and maybe even extend it a little bit.
You've heard, we've heard from some of your neighboring districts that are having a harder time. Westerville had a failed levy last year, and they're trying again with an earned income tax levy. We just talked to Columbus, which is having to cut $50 million due to lower state funding than expected. Do you feel lucky that your levy passed?
Oh, my gosh. We feel incredibly fortunate. That campaign was, I think, the hardest that any of us have ever worked on anything in our lives. And we were so appreciative of our community, put that level of trust in the district and that vote of confidence for the work that our teachers are doing. So, yes, I feel incredibly fortunate. Certainly are watching, for example, Westerville in the earned income and how that process goes for them, because I think we're all going to have to be nimble here over the next few years in figuring this out. So still very much paying attention, but also so grateful to our community for the passing issue 39.
Yeah, with Westerville trying something different, not property taxes, but doing the earned income tax levy, I have to feel that all district eyes around the whole state are upon Westerville to see if that works. Because if property taxes went away, I guess that's where you'd have to look.
Probably, yes. And the earned income tax checks a lot of boxes in terms of what people might be in favor of, benefits seniors and things like that. So certainly have our fingers crossed for Angie Hamburger and her team in Westerville, and we'll be keeping a really close eye on it as well.
There was a lot of debate at the State House whenever it came to what districts are doing with their money. That was a part of the whole contentious issue with implementing the Fair School Funding Plan, and lawmakers were not happy with the amount of money districts had in their savings accounts. There was all this talk of the cash carryover. So I looked at Hilliard's five-year forecast, and it looks like you had about $104 million on hand on June 30th. So what would you say to a taxpayer who wants you to spend that down rather than asking for more money?
Well, first of all, it's just good business to have 3 to 6 months of cash on hand. We still have to pay payroll. Our payroll and benefits is about $18 million a month. And so I think it's with the cash carryover conversation, I think it's important to remember how different districts are across the state of Ohio and what different situations districts are in. It's a little frustrating to have this conversation because I was in the profession not that long ago when the market tanked. And districts were criticized for not having more cash on hand and needing assistance during that period of time. And so we're really criticizing something that's just good business. The if you saw that the governor's property tax work group made 20 recommendations here in the last couple of weeks. One of those recommendations was to cap the carryover at 100%. You'll see ours hovers between 35 and 40. So we're well below that, but that is where we feel is most comfortable for us to stay. Our district has a board policy of having to have at least 20% cash carryover on hand. And we don't dip below that 20% threshold until year five of the five-year forecasts. And even then, it's just barely below the 20%.
What's it like whenever you're advocating at the state house and you have, you know, lawmakers arguing with you about how much money's in your savings account and they're arguing with you about asking for more property taxes? You know, what is that like for a district like yours whenever you have to go to the state house and explain yourself?
You know, it's a little challenging, mostly because a couple things. And one is that superintendents right now in the state aren't everybody's favorite people. The second part is the bottom line is it's really hard to change anybody's opinion right now. It is so partisan and everything falls right along party lines. And so I can talk to one legislator and it's a waste of time because I know they see things the way that we do. And I know that they're going to vote in support of whatever it is that we need. And I can talk to another legislator and know that they're in a completely different place. And in really changing anybody's mind is getting more and more challenging.
Mm-hmm. Throughout the course of this series, Untangled the Cost of Learning, I've been asking people here and there if there's a better way to pay for K-12 schools than what we're doing. If you had a magic wand, what's your better way?
You know, I think I certainly understand the point of House Bill 920 in the 70s that basically prevented unvoted millage to increase. With inflation,
is that the 20 mil floor bill, House Bill 920?
Or no, House Bill 920 is basically the bill that said when an operating levy is passed, it generates a very specific amount of money, and it, for the life of that levy, it can only generate that amount of money. So no growth in our revenues from inflation, which I do understand. But on the flip side, it forces us to be back on the ballot way more often than anybody cares to be. So if there was a way to find a happy medium between those two, I think that that would be really beneficial for our voters and really beneficial for schools.
So are you saying that is that related, just so that I understand, is that related to inflation, or are you talking about like when property values increase, if it's for a set amount?
When property values increase, our revenues do not. And most, because our system of funding schools in the state of Ohio is so complicated, it really requires a lot of education to have people understand that, because they see their property values really going up and they see their property taxes going up, but our revenues are not. And so that creates a lot of frustration when homeowners see that and then they see us back on the ballot as well.
Right, because even if the property taxes are going up, a third of most people's property taxes, if not more, go to school districts. So when they look at the bill, they see you and think you're getting all the money, but yours is not increasing at the same rate that others are. Is that what you mean?
It's a natural assumption to make. And when we educate people, we say that. But the reality is our revenues do not increase with increasing property values for the most part. There's a small inside millage that's not worthy of a bunch of exploration. There's a small part of our revenue that does increase with those property taxes, but the bulk of our revenue does not increase with increased property values.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time and for explaining a little bit more about property taxes to me. It's been very helpful. We've been talking with Hilliard City School Superintendent David Stewart. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to get the perspective from a rural school district, Fairfield Union. That's when Untangled the Cost of Learning from All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Untangled the Cost of Learning, a show from All Sides and WOSU, where we take a complicated topic and untangle it for you. Try to explain it in an easier way. And this season, we are untangling the cost of learning for K-12 schools. This hour, we're getting the perspective of three districts, one urban, one suburban, one rural. We already heard from the superintendents of Columbus and Hilliard, and now we're going to get the more rural perspective. Fairfield Union Local School District is about 50 minutes southeast of Columbus near Lancaster, and it has 1,900 students in four school buildings. The Fairfield Union superintendent joins us now, Chad Belville. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So when you think about the budget for your school district and those 1,900 students, what comes to mind for your budget? Is it stability or is it fragility?
Well, it's you could probably go back to COVID. It's been very unstable, a lot of guessing, trying to plan out what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, not just looking at things happening in the district right now, but also trying to plan for the future. When you're in a small rural district, it presents its own challenges because you have limited resources at times. We're surrounded by some large school districts to the south of us. Logan Hocking, Pickerington is close to us, Canal Winchester, Lancaster City Schools. So we have some large school districts around us. And so you're always competing for resources, whether that's teachers, bus drivers, those type of things. So just trying to plan for day-to-day operations and then also looking out into the future to try to provide as much as you can for your kids and your community, that's a great challenge. And just keeps getting more interesting.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about the state's Fair School Funding Plan, that six-year plan that was not fully implemented. It was implemented for four of the 6 years, and then for the last 2 years, they used numbers from 2022 instead of current numbers. There's a whole debate about it. That's the most recent budget cycle. In the most recent amount of money that you got from the state, did you get what you were expecting?
No, we were cut pretty dramatically, or what I consider dramatically, over this two-year budget cycle. State funding wise, we received a little over $800,000 less than what we thought we were going to receive. We were able to recoup a little bit of that because of our outstanding report card. There was some money designated for schools that had performed well in the report card.
Oh, you got a bonus?
We did. We did.
Congratulations.
Hey, listen, just a lot of amazing work by my faculty, my staff, students, families. That's one of the things I think with a small rural district is everyone's like family. You don't go to the grocery store and not run into somebody and have a discussion about things happening in the community or things happening in the school. And that is such a huge blessing to have that tight-knit community. And, you see people when you talk to them, hey, your child. And I was on my way up today. We hosted the Mid-State League cross-country meet this weekend and had a student fall ill during the meet. And so I called the parents. They texted me back. So you have communications like that that maybe you don't get in larger school districts. And because of that close-knit family atmosphere, you end up having some huge benefits like success on the report card where, you know, everybody pulls together and supports each other, and it makes for a great atmosphere.
Did you receive as much federal funding? There's been a lot of debate about where federal funding is at this moment because it's confusing, but how's your federal funding?
Pretty consistent. We receive such a small amount. I think federal funding is somewhere around 3 or 4% of our total budget, maybe even less than that. So it's not a huge dollar amount, but I think we've received basically the same in federal funds.
When you think about the state money, what the money that state gives versus local taxpayer money from property taxes, how much is different for a district like yours? Because you have less density, fewer houses than a larger district would have.
We're heavy in agriculture, so that plays into it as well. One of the things that I think is a real challenge in the state of Ohio, and one of the things that's very concerning for school districts, at least for myself, is the over-reliance on local funding to support the schools. You know, historically, you look back in 1991, I think residential property tax or residential owners supplied roughly 46% of property taxes. Mm-hmm. In 2023, that's almost up to 68%. Mm-hmm. So a larger burden is being placed on homeowners to fund school districts, and we're no different. More than 50% of our funding comes from local property taxes or local taxes. Mm-hmm. The state share, it's mid-40s for us and is constantly going down. Mm-hmm. So That presents challenges. It puts more burden on your local community. And, you know, thankfully, we're extremely blessed at Fairfield Union. We have an incredible community. The support is unparalleled. And that's, you know, that's a blessing. But as a district, we also realize and understand the burden that is placed on our community members through property taxes. And I live in the district. You know, so I have a daughter that's a junior this year. So I understand that burden. I feel that as a homeowner living in the district. So it's definitely a challenge.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and this is Untangled, the Cost of Learning. We're talking about what it's like to run a school budget in a rural school district with Fairfield Union Superintendent Chad Belville. So your district passed a levy in 2021, and it was supposed to be a 5-year levy. So I guess we're looking at year 4 right now. Will you need to look at another levy in the future?
This was a permanent improvement levy, and it was a renewal for us. Our permanent improvement levy first passed in 1982, I believe. Mm-hmm. And our community, I've talked about our community support. They have passed that permanent improvement renewal every time since 1982. So we're talking that levy's been on the books for over 40 years at this point. It's always a tight vote. So, you know, we do go back every 5 years. You have to go back to have that renewed. And, you know, those are discussions we're going to have. It is time for that levy to be up. The permanent improvement levy generates roughly $370,000 a year for us, but it's for the maintenance of buildings. It's not used for any other purpose. It's for the upkeep of our facilities, and our community takes great pride in our facilities. Our buildings are roughly 15, 16 years old in that neighborhood, and you walk through them and they look brand new. Our maintenance staff does an amazing job, and like I said, our community has supported that permanent improvement levy for over 40 years.
Lawmakers just work to do away with districts having emergency levies, and I think replacement
Correct.
Levies is the other word.
Correct.
So yours
Correct.
Is different wording.
We have two levies. We have an income tax levy that's been on the books, I think, since the early 90s. I'm in my 10th year at Fairfield Union, so all these levies predate me. And we have our permanent improvement levy that's been on the books since 82. So those are the only two levies that we have. The income tax levy is huge. It produces a large portion of our budget.
We were just talking with Hilliard about how Westerville is going for an earned income tax levy because they had a property tax levy that failed. And, and the Hilliard superintendent just told me that, like, all eyes are on Westerville to see if that works. But you're already doing it. So,
ours is 1% is a continuous, and the other 1% is set to expire, I believe, in 2036.
So you don't have to worry about it right now.
I don't have to worry about it right now. But like I said, that's a big chunk of our funding. And so that's something you're always worried about. But one of the things that we've always taken great pride in our district is being good stewards of our tax dollars. And so not having to go to our voters to ask for new levies really is something that we're conscientious about. We know how much they pay in property taxes. We know that the income tax levy is there. So, you know, I just don't think it's an option for us to go to the voters and ask for new levies. Renewals, you know, those are things. It's a fixed amount that, you know, we get coming in. It doesn't increase like our permanent improvement. It's the same amount of money virtually every year. So we take a lot of pride in not going and asking for more and more.
I was talking with an economist about the burden on homeowners for property taxes, and he also mentioned the burden for landowners. He was specifically talking about farmland. Is that something you hear about a lot in your district?
Absolutely. I mean, again, our community is so supportive. We don't get complaints about it. It's just a discussion of what it is. And we acknowledge that in our community, your neighbors are your family. And so you have those discussions, you know what's happening, and that plays into us trying to be really mindful about what we spend, how we spend it, making sure that we are utilizing our funds to the best extent possible to service our kids and our community.
We talked on the show a lot about the money school districts keep in their savings account. The lawmakers like to call it the cash carryover, and they were annoyed at school districts who had a high cash carryover balance. Your ending balance on June 30th was $7.6 million, which is actually low from what I was looking at. But it was $17 million the year before. So did you have a big expensive year?
complete transparency. We knew that the cash carryover was a large topic, and we were at roughly a 60% carryover, and we did make a large transfer to a capital improvement fund. One of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot is the upkeep of our facilities, and we have our permanent improvement levy that generates, like I said, roughly $370,000 a year. But when we built our schools, we did it through the Ohio Facilities Commission, and just in my 10 years at Fairfield Union, I've had to replace every boiler at the middle school and high school because of poor construction. I've had to replace two roofs out of my four buildings, again, because of poor construction. We have found things that weren't done properly that we've constantly had to upgrade or fix or repair or completely replace. So we know that, for example, we're going to have to repave our school parking lots at some point. Well, that's going to be a $2 million expense. Well, we don't want to go to our community and ask for money every few years. So we really worked hard. When I first came to the district 10 years ago, we had roughly $7-8 million in our general fund, which would have been that cash carryover. And we really evaluated what we were doing, how we were doing it. We were strategic in planning ahead. And so we built up our carryover because we knew we needed to take care of our facilities and provide a first-class learning environment for our kids. So instead of going to our voters all the time, we really tried to save and just very conscientious about how we spend our money. And so it was discouraging from that standpoint whenever these discussions are going on about cash carryover. We weren't creating a savings account. We were trying to keep money there to fix things as soon as they break, provide for our kids, you know, with the science of reading and new dyslexia screenings and interventions, potentially the science of math coming up. We've spent well over $1 million on curriculum purchases just in the past 2 or 3 years. So that's what all that money is for. It isn't just to sit
to
there
have
and,
savings, yeah.
and have a savings account. It's to prevent us from having to continuously go back to voters to ask for more money to provide for our students. We were trying to do that on our own. And so we did make a large transfer to our capital improvement fund so we can make sure that money is still there to take care of our facilities, take care of curriculum needs, those type of things. So, I prefer to look at it as us just being good stewards of our taxpayers' money.
We only have a minute left, but I wanted to ask you, throughout this series, I've been asking people if there's a better way to pay for K-12 schools than what we're doing right now. What would be your better way?
I think we were on a good track with the Fair School Funding Plan. I know that was expensive. Obviously, that was a big bill there. I don't know that there's a great answer. I acknowledge and see the burden that is placed on homeowners and landowners with property taxes, and I think there do need to be some reforms there, but I think we have to be smart about what we're doing and not create a bigger problem. And I don't guess my opinion really matters a whole lot. It's just that I think there needs to be a lot of discussions from both sides of the aisle and be cautious about making dramatic changes.
We've been talking with the superintendent of Fairfield Union Local School District, Chad Belville. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Untangled, the Cost of Learning. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you can hear all 5 episodes in the series. You can also find all the episodes of Untangled at WOSU.org/untangled. For All Sides and WOSU, I'm Amy Jurevich.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.